Thank you, Mari, for the invitation and also for the hospitality. It's a very enjoying experience for me. I want to first maybe describe a little bit the diffusion model. So I'm going to focus basically on just one single locus with multiple alleles. But to do that, I need some background to about two alleles. Actually, two alleles are a very interesting province to open. Okay. And then the next three sections will focus on multiple alleles. The first one will be a uniform selection. And the next will be talking about loss of alleles and also protection of alleles. And then I'll probably go to some discussions of open problems in this area. So let me just quickly recall the assumptions which Tom talked about for discrete settings, if I remember correctly. So we always assume, we always start with the discrete models and say, generations are discrete and non-overlapping, and the populations are divided into deans. And we put into set up a lattice basically, and the deans exchange a migrant. I'm used to patches. I guess genetics use deans quite a bit. And selection, we assume basically all fertilities are the same, so selection acts only on viability difference, because usually fitness is just a product of fertility and the reproduction, right? So we also neglect the mutation and then genetic drift. So mutation will be maybe not too small, but not too big, I guess, in certain somehow in the middle, as Tom suggested, maybe 10 minus 3 or maybe. Anyway, so that's the discrete setting. So Tom's not like here derive a diffusion application for this model. So I'm going to describe in a few minutes. Okay. So let's say we are always thinking about just one single locus, very simple looking, but with multiple alleles. So the number of alleles is n. And we are always thinking about a finite habitat. There's quite a bit of work on infinite habitat, which is also very interesting. The mathematical techniques are somewhat different, okay? And the theory for bounded domains are much well developed in mathematics in certain sense, okay? Let's anyway fix to the finite habitat for this talk, okay? And also let's denote the frequency for each allele AI as PI of XT. So X is a location. T is a time, okay? So what we are going to talk about is a partial differential equation for PI. So let me just quickly go through the basics, so because they're important. So Rij of X is we call the selection coefficient for the genotype Aij. So what's happening, if I understand correctly, Tom's derivation is, you can think as omega ij is fitness, right? So if you assume it's a weak selection, so you can simply write as this way, okay? So these gamma ij's there, we call the selection coefficients. It's really not exactly the fitness, okay? The key point is that they depend on X. Actually, some of our results also can depend on frequency itself, okay? But let me just try to this case, which is easier to present, okay? The point is that this selection coefficient will change in space, okay? Probably the most interesting, one of the most interesting case is they were switched selection direction in two separate regions. Anyway, I'll go to details about that. That's how the climates are formed. Okay. So the selection coefficient for particular allele AI is just this average. You can think as PI is like a probability or frequency. So you average out, then you get the selection coefficient for particular allele AI. And if you average one more time, you get the mean selection coefficient. So the contribution of the selection is simply given, this is well known, is simply the Pi times the difference between the selection coefficient for this Leo AI and the mean. So it's always the difference is driving the selection. So that's very well known. So from a partial differential equation people point of view, this kind of form is very peculiar because it's the everything else is the same except this Ri there, okay? Because this R bar is the same for the total population. So it's a kind of peculiar form, okay? So that suggests maybe certain Lyapunov functions will exist, for example, okay? So anyway, so we go to migration. So the first we assume the population density is just a function of x only, okay? And also we consider functions m alpha of x and v alpha beta of x. They call the mean displacement or the covariance of the displacement. So what it really means to me is that this v alpha beta is essentially the diffusion coefficients. And this m alpha of x is something like a drift in certain directions. Okay, so once you can derive, well, Tom derived this one. So the first one, this v alpha beta, this first term gives you the diffusion. The half is probabilistically like to use half, okay? And the whole thing here is gives you the essentially the drift coefficient here, okay? So usually we call this called a second order elliptic operator. It's elliptic because this principal matrix here we call it positive definite, which simply means if you consider all the eigenvalues of this matrix, they are strictly positive. And of course it's a symmetric, okay? So the simple case would be simply the Laplace operator here, okay? Which I'm going to focus on most of the time, because it's much easier to describe results.
It's also back in time, of course, migration back in time.
I saw that this always, what do you mean migration is back?
No, backward migration matrix that we had the last talks.
I usually don't think that way. Okay, maybe Tom, I don't usually don't think that. I don't quite understand the answer.
Which to answer the question I'm asking you, or do you wish to answer?
Yes, can you answer that? Because for me, I don't.
So, you take the discrete equation that I had written, okay, which had the backward migration matrix. You need to do a lot more, because the backward migration matrix, I think I said that, maybe in the second talk, conflates the population density and the migration pattern. So what you need to do is a fairly long derivation, and since you know, background in physics, you see it's not a conservation law, which I mentioned in passing. The reason is that the capital N, which is not the migration matrix, it's a vector of difficult coefficients, and the V referred to forward migration. You have to untangle it. So you write the backward migration matrix in terms of the forward migration matrix. And then you do diffusion approximation the way here basically it was developed by Feller and before that Kolmogorov. So by this time you don't have any backward migration, or the M and V are determined by the forward migration pattern.
Thank you.
But the diffusion operator here describes how a lineage moves back in time.
No.
Just a random movement.
This is not forward.
Yeah, just a random movement.
I wouldn't want to say so because, of course, this will be a contribution to the time derivative, which is forward. No. The backward, for what I was doing, it was convenient, and I glossed over some of the background to keep things reasonably brief. But it's all developed from the forward migration matrix. And in fact, because you're making a diffusion approximation, this covers a lot more biology than I showed. I mentioned there's soft selection, hard selection. This is equally good for hard selection. So I think at this point, it's best to think about just evolution forward in time.
Okay. Thank you. I'm glad that this my mentee is always here. Okay, so this is now we come to so Tom basically in 1989 derived this diffusion approximation. So the I would say he has two main contributions. One is this diffusion operator, and another important contribution is the boundary condition, because we are thinking about, so this boundary condition is a little bit strange. If you think about a mathematics point of view, it is not a flux, because people usually think, because it's here, it only involves the matrix V, does not involve at all the drift terms. So it's really not a zero flux condition. Okay. So actually many mathematicians ask me why this is the case. It's, well, because populations, the reason is because we are assuming really not no individual concept of the boundary there. So it really should be no flux for the population from my understanding, right?
It is.
Yeah.
You can derive it.
You can derive. Actually, this equation comes from the no flux of populations, not the no flux of G frequencies. Okay.
So PI is not a density, and that's why you don't get a zero flux condition directly for it. So there are two ways. You say there's zero flux for the density of AIs and the population, and you can get it. Or, I think more rigorously, you start with my discrete model, you start up a chain of colonies, and I actually did this even in two dimensions. And when you make a diffusion approximation, you will get this condition. Because the discrete model, of course, contains all the information. So you should be able to, and you are able to get the boundary condition.
So let me just maybe be a little bit careful here, because maybe some of you will be the first time to see this, what this means. Okay, so let me draw a picture. So we are thinking about the boundary domain here. Let's take simply the delta matrix, the identity matrix. Okay, so then what that condition simply means is, so the vector mu is unit vector going out this direction, so it's a vector field, you can think. So then that condition simply means it's your gradient, this is direction for the gradient PI, because they are perpendicular. Well, that means the gradient of the frequency is always tangential to the boundary. Okay, this is the simplest case. Okay. So in that case, that means you can also say there's no flux, because they are, you know. Is that okay? So we also assume that the initial condition is non-active, the gene frequency, and also the sum is equal to 1. So, okay. So that's the model. Is there any questions about the model? Okay.
This is for fixed population density rho.
Yes. Very good question. Yes. Yeah. I think Tom has some.
Right.
Yeah. Cost space. Yeah. Its population density changes, I think, becomes interestingly complicated. So to avoid a trivial case, because we assume that each allele is present, that because the you can think the integral as the number of. Well, it's something like a number of the, because this is a, well. Yeah, I should multiply by rho, then I get the number. If I multiply this by rho, I will get the numbers. Maybe I should say integral of rho of x times that. That would be better. That would be the total number of alleles present there. Okay. So anyway, so this condition simply means you need to have each allele present in the beginning. Otherwise, it's not in. Okay, and also we assume the population density, the drift coefficient, the migration coefficient, and selection coefficient are so-called Hodel continuous. This is a technique in mathematics. Simply means it's a little better than continuous. Okay, and we also assume the initial condition is continuous. Continuous distributed. This one is not crucial, okay. And we also assume the boundary is C2. What this simply means is that any small piece can be written as a graph of a C2 function. Okay, so in other words, the boundary is pieced up by many pieces of smooth functions, as a graph of smooth functions, okay? So these are just mathematical assumptions. So what we are really interested in, what is the behavior of the gene frequency as t go to infinity? Of course, this question is too big. There's no good answer to this at all, okay? So we are going to consider, we are going to start from some simple cases first, okay? Okay, so let me describe a few basic facts, okay? There's a theory in mathematics called the maximum principles of existence theory for evolution equations. And this theory can tell us something the following. The previous parabolic system, in essence, is well-defined, which means has a unique solution. If you give any initial data, we have a unique solution. And it's classical, simply means the second, so this simply means the second derivative of x exists, and the first derivative of t exists. So everything is in classical sense. You can take usual derivatives. Okay, so you don't need to worry too much. Basically, says the system is completely well defined, as good as you can imagine. Okay. What is interesting is that for any time t positive, the gene frequency will immediately become positive for any x. Okay, this is because of the random diffusion. Okay, random diffusion has essentially has an infinity speed. Okay, to pass it, and also the total sum is equal to 1 for any t. So this essential means the model is probably correct. Okay, conserve the total frequency. Okay, so what this simply means is that the dynamics of the system is on some, if three alleles simply means it's on a triangle. Okay, so maybe I should draw a picture. Okay, so this condition, what this simply means is that if you think about P1 here, P2 here, P3, so what happens is that they are on this triangle, and the vertex here is 1, 0, 0. This is 0, 1, 0. This is 0, 0, 1 in three dimensions. You connect these three points. Can you people see? You connect these three points, you get a triangle. So all the dynamics is on this triangle for three alleles. Okay. Is that okay? Okay, so there's one particular simple but interesting case, which is no dominance. We talk about quite a bit. Tom and Reinhardt talk about this a little bit. So let me just quickly define this. Okay. So what's the meaning of the no dominance? It simply means the selection coefficients is additive, basically. Can be written as a sum of Si plus Sj, x. Okay. Again, the key point is that this depends on x. Okay. For this format, the contribution, the selection coefficient becomes very simple. And the contribution of selection is simply Pi times Sj minus S bar. What's good about this mathematically is that this becomes a quadratic in Pi. Because previously, still cubic. But sometimes, I'm right, it's quadratic, okay. It's quadratic in Pi. Mathematically, quadratic usually is in cubic in Pi. Quadratic is much easier than cubic. Okay. So we will often come back to this no dominance case to get insights. Okay. Okay. So let me still just continue with the basics. Okay. So These migration selection PDE models has quite a bit long history from 1975, I believe. It starts work with Najilagi in genetics paper, which is a seminal one, and also Wendon Freeman's paper, which is also seminal in mathematics. Okay, so I actually checked the both papers. Almost all geneticists refer to this paper. Almost all mathematicians refer to this paper. I want to refer to both.
I hope Wendell is not as embarrassed as I am, because I would much rather biologists refer to his equal.
I actually gain insights from reading both, to be honest. So, yeah. So I encourage you to read both. It could be a good experience. Yeah. There are two particularly interesting cases for two allele case. One is, as I said, it's a no dominance case. For the no dominance case, okay, because for some reasons we put a lambda here. This lambda you can think as the selection strengths relative to the migration rates. Okay, so lambda small means weak selections. Lambda large means strong selection. It turns out this parameter becomes very important. There's another case, for instance, one allele is a dominant over the other, the other one is recessive, okay? And this, the second case, is much harder, okay? I hope I can talk about a little bit about this maybe in discussions, okay? Okay, so now let's come to some results, okay? So let's assume the migration is simply homogeneous and isotropic, which simply means the operator is a Laplace operator. We also assume Si minus S2 changes sign. This becomes really important. What this means, so I need to draw a picture here. Oops. So what this means is that your habitat is cut into two parts. In this part is S1 is bigger than S2. So without migration, A1 is always fixed here. The other one is reversed. So here, A1 is fixed without migration. Here is A2 is fixed without migration. So this condition simply means there's a change of selection direction. Okay. It turns out this integral becomes very important. This integral what essentially means on average, A2 may be doing better than A1. Okay. So when this condition is satisfied, so the linear eigenvalue problem has always a unique positive eigenvalue with a positive eigenfunction. This is the observation first by Wendell Fleming, I believe. This is quite interesting. Actually, this created a business in mathematics for about 20 years, okay? The reason is because people have been studying things, this kind of problem, so-called, there's some work before that, but somehow not connected to genetics. This business is called eigenvalue problems with indefinite weight, because this function here, the weight function, changes sign, okay? There's a lot of interesting question about it, but what is interesting here is that the eigenvalue can be positive. The reason is because when lambda is zero is also eigenvalue here. When lambda is zero, phi can be chosen as positive constants. What is non-trivial is that there's a positive eigenvalue there. Okay, I'll come to this a little bit. Okay, so the first result, the first mathematical result I'm going to talk about is the following. I will draw a picture, but let me draw a picture. Okay. You can read it, then I'll draw a picture. It's very easy to understand then. So if you think of this as lambda here, lambda, so this is selection strength. And this you think as P1, maybe the maximum value of in space of P1. So the largest frequency, for example. You can think about it that way. And this is 1 here, okay? What this first part says simply says the following. There's a critical value here, which we call, this is eigenvalue. It's a threshold value. When selection strength is not too big, what happens is that everything will converge to. So in this case, A2 is fixed. So P1 goes to 0, so A2 is fixed. The reason is because on average, A2 is doing better, on average. So when your selection is not too big, then A2 is still winning. The second part of the result simply says that if lambda is bigger than lambda naught, then you can find a polymorphism for both alleles. And also, this polymorphism is actually stable. So what happens mathematically, if you, I wonder whether you know so-called bifurcation theory. For physicists, they should know, for geneticists, it's bifurcation theory. Okay? What happens is that there's a bifurcation coming, a steady state, bifurcated from here, and it continues to infinity. Actually, the maximum actually will converge to 1, actually. Okay. What this simply says is that if you pick any equilibrium here, it's always global stable in dynamical, okay, in this point. Okay. So this result is probably the first, complete answer to this null dominance case. There's one case which maybe you're not interested, but mathematics is interesting, is that what happens when the integral is equal to 0? For this case, the graph is different. For this case, is the graph becomes something like this. It's 1 here. Everything is the same. The bifurcation does not come from out here anymore. The bifurcation comes from here. And this point is half. Okay. So that means for any lambda positive, you always expect a polymorphism in this case. Okay. So this is non-genetic. This condition is non-genetic. So genetic is not interesting. But mathematics is very interesting because it's a borderline case. Okay. This can tell you a lot of other things. Okay.
One question. The theorems give existence of vector lambda.
Yes.
Does one know anything about the shape of the
solution? In one dimension, yes. For instance, when Si minus S1 minus 2, for instance, it's a monotone, then the solution, the client is also, the solution is also monotone. Am I right? Yeah, in one dimension. In general dimension, it becomes complicated. Because S1 minus S2 can be really general form, so really difficult to expect. But when lambda go to infinity, yes, it becomes a step function, essentially. Okay. Yes, I think so. And Henry leaves that as a homework problem in his book. Yeah, but I think it's true, yeah. And it can be done, yeah. So then Henry, yes. So we know lambda is large, and we know some special cases for the shape, for the of a Klein. Well, I wouldn't call Klein, I would call polymorphism for this case. So then Henry did this for homogeneous isotropic migration. Tom and I just general to arbitrary migration, but I think essentially all the ideas go to Henry, okay. So this is two alleles. So for no dominance, two alleles, it's essentially well understood, okay? But other cases are much less known. Okay. So let me just tell you a little bit about what happens for three alleles, okay? Because for two alleles, as you can see from the figure, everything is so nice, okay? So for three alleles, also no dominance. Tom and I can construct examples such that even for three alleles with homogeneous isotropic migration, there's a very complex phenomenon, which is completely different from two alleles. So let me describe some of this kind of phenomena. For instance, if you increase the selection strength from small to large, arbitrarily finite many changes of stability of the edge equilibrium can occur. So if you recall, what this means is the following. So you suppose you have three alleles. This one is 100, this is 010, this is 001. Usually they can have a three edge equilibrium, which is like two allele case. What happens is that this edge equilibrium can become unstable for a while and become stable again as lambda increases, and do this arbitrarily many times. You give me any time, I can choose selection coefficients to make that happen. And this is very different from two allele case, because for two allele case is that once you are protected, as you increase lambda, you are always protected. Not for three alleles. Well, fortunately, we did this only in 2006. If we did it in 2002, probably we would not do anything because this is really bad news. Okay, even for the simplest no dominance three allele case, there are complicated things like that. So what general results can you do, right?
Does that imply that it will be harder in reality to have three alleles?
Yes, I think so. It's much harder to maintain three alleles than two alleles. That's my, yeah. But we'll come back to your comments a little bit later. Yeah. Or another way to put that is that it's much harder to maintain three alleles for intermediate, for small or intermediate lambdas. Larger lambda, yes, you can do it.
Yeah. I wonder whether you can get any patterns like spiral waves when you have three alleles.
I don't know that. My guess is probably not. Probably not, because the system seems to, it's the steady state. The internal, okay, so this corresponding appearance of internal equilibrium can occur. So those are, they can be unstable actually, those internal equilibriums, but I doubt that it will be hyperbifurcations coming out from those internal equilibriums. Probably not. I don't know. Yes.
So it's not terribly uncommon in dynamical systems that you can deal with a two-body problem, and the three-body problem is arbitrarily complicated. But then when you go to a very large number of bodies, mm-hmm. you can hope to get the simplicity again for and sort of universal results for some different reason.
Yeah, I think they work there on infinite many alleles, right?
Right.
That work on infinite many alleles, right? Which I don't know the work well enough to, yeah. But two and three here do make a quite big difference, yeah. And I think understand three, four, five alleles are important because when we go to say multi-loci problems with a very weak recombination, right? They're very similar to multiple allele one locus problem in some sense, so.
There's no work, right?
There's
no
work in the absence of the migration. It may be simple, but it would be extremely difficult. Okay. So what we did, how we got this kind of phenomenon is the following. We start with two alleles. Okay, we start with two alleles, and then perturb one of the alleles a little bit. So in other words, for these three alleles, two of them are very similar, the other one is quite different. Because when you have three alleles, if two of them are identical, then you can have many, you have a manifold of equilibrium. And if you perturb the manifold a little bit, since weird things can happen, that's what the basic logic is. So that simply means probably these phenomena are not common, maybe. Okay. So that's for three alleles. But I think, okay, so for next, I still want to say whether we can derive some general results. And I think we can do some general results. So So the next one is about uniform selection, which Tom talked about. So I'm going to go a little bit quickly over here because it's very similar to what Tom discussed. Okay. So for the uniform selection, simply means all the selection coefficients are constant. Okay. The key point here is that the initial data are spatially inhomogeneous, arbitrary. Okay. So in the absence of migration, you have a very you simply have the standard ODE selection dynamic equation. The theorem says the following. If the equation 2 has one equilibrium which is globally asymptotically stable for the ODE, then the PDE solutions also converge to that. So in other words, everything becomes homogeneous, or essentially homogeneous after a long time. Okay. So here, migration really doesn't do much except to make the initial conditions become more and more constant. Okay. So migration here is simply smoothing and averaging everything out, essentially. Because the environment is homogeneous, so migration really also try to do the same thing. So this is expected. But the proof is a little bit interesting, so I want to say a few words about it. Hedler actually did this for homogeneous isotropic migration. His idea is to use the monotonicity. Okay, for the ODE, the mean fitness is always increasing. For the PDE, you can do spatially averaged. So he proved the monotonicity of the certain, you just take the integral of the mean fitness, for example, to prove that's strictly increasing. Because he needs to use induction by parts, so the result doesn't work for arbitrary migration. For arbitrary migration, Tom and I actually construct differently the optimal function, which is really interesting. So let me say a few words here, because Tom didn't talk about the proof there. So what you do is you do the following. You first of all take the log of PIs, which is an entropy type, and multiply by the PI hat, which is a frequency there, at the equilibrium, and you sum it up. So this is a little bit like a certain entropy, right? Yeah. What's interesting is that you take the minimum value in space. Once you have that, you can show this function is strictly increasing in T, as long as your initial data is not the equilibrium. Because if you set the equilibrium, it's always there. Okay. So. One conjecture is that that should be true for boundary equilibrium, but this is much harder. Okay, and the reason it's much harder is because to prove such a boundary equilibrium is global attracting, you have to show loss of certain alleles, right? So in other words, for the ODE, say that one allele is lost. You have to show for the PDE that allele is also lost. This is something different from the internal equilibrium, right? Because for internal equilibrium, everything just converges to it. And this one is losing lost. Okay. So now let's go to talk about so-called loss of allele. Okay. So the question is, under what conditions you can show that an allele is lost? Okay, it turns out, as the counterexample, as the example in three alleles showed, the situation will be not too easy. The answer will be not too easy, right? But there's some work on this. So let me describe a general result, and then I will try to give examples which I think is interesting. Okay. So suppose that there is this index I and also constants gamma ij such that each gamma ij is non-negative and sum is equal to 1, so that gamma ih is controlled by the average of the other gamma jh for every h. Okay, and also in some sense, for certain h, this inequality must be strict for some x, okay? The reason is because otherwise all the alleles can be identical. Then, of course, you cannot get any answer, right? Okay. Under these assumptions, you can show this allele AI is lost. But these conditions is not that intuitive at all. Okay. There's some interesting explanations a little bit later. Okay, I try to tell you. Okay, but let me just roughly say what this means. What this roughly say simply means the following. Gamma JH RI RJ of P is bigger or equal to RH of P. What this essentially means is this. So this essentially is the selection coefficient for, I. Maybe I can simply put I here, okay? What this simply means is that the selection coefficient for allele AI is less or equal to the average of other selection coefficients.
To some average. Sufficient that one average this kind exists.
I'm sorry?
It's sufficient that one average
yes.
exists.
One average is enough. Yeah. There are some interesting averages which I'm going to talk about a little bit later. Okay. So another conclusion is the following. Another conclusion is that if you start your initial condition of Pj, say big or equal to a positive constant, then the maximum of Pi is always controlled by its initial data. Mathematically, this simply means the following. So let me draw a picture here. So let's again take three alleles. So this is 1, 0, 0. 0, 0, 1, 0, 1, 0. What this really means is that if you stay away from here, and also stay away from here, so in other words, if you start your initial data here, and if you start in this part, or close to that, it always stay close. So basically says that if you initially close to this segment, then it's always close. This is essentially about the local stability, if you are familiar with it.
But it's under the assumption you had before.
Yes, of course, yes. Otherwise, it's not true. Okay. The reason you cannot come here is because you may follow the flow going this direction. And after a long time, you may come back, right? You see what I mean? If the dynamic of this one is going this way on this, okay? It may follow from here and then come back, okay? So these are the essential explanations, but that's not crucial, but okay. Okay. For no dominance case, this has a very simple answer actually for no dominance case. So for no dominance case, if the selection coefficient Sij of x is less or equal to the average, then everything is true. Okay. But still, this is not intuitively not clear. So still, let me go to even a more special case. Okay. So that case is interesting. Okay, I'm going to spend a little more time with you here, okay? So suppose there's a constant, gamma I, such that Si of x is simply less or equal to the average of these two. Okay? For every I between 2 and a minus 1. And also we assume S1 minus Sn changes sign. So now let me draw a picture. Oops. So here, this is S1, bigger than Sn. This is S1 is less than Sn. So what this means, what all this condition means, will suggest that if Pi go to 0 for every I between 2 and A minus 1. So now if we do the non-trivial decomposition of omega 1 and omega n, so this is omega 1. This is omega n. Okay. What this simply means is the following. In omega 1, allele A1 is the fittest, actually. You can show that. And in omega n, An is the fittest. So in some sense, allele A1 and An are extreme alleles. And all the other alleles are intermediate. Intermediate simply means they may not be the worst, but certainly they are not the best. And our result simply says that the intermediate alleles are eliminated. We did not say all intermediate alleles are assumed. We only say under this condition, the intermediate ones are eliminated. So if you think about A1 and AN correspond to some specialist, right? Specialist genes. Then those generalist genes are eliminated. Say okay. There is even another interesting application to that, even more special than this, so I'm going to tell you. Actually, this example motivated my study with Tom for the last 8 to 10 years. Okay. So let's take Si of x to be equal to Ai times g of x. And this Ai is some constants. And g of x changes sign. So let's label A1 bigger than A2, so on and so forth. So if you can think as A1, and then you can choose gamma I to be equal to this format for the previous one, so that to apply the previous results. Okay, so what is interesting is the following. The elimination of intermediate alleles may be able to provide a mechanism for symmetric spiration. Okay, let's think the following. Okay, I need to draw a picture. So suppose in the beginning, you only have alleles A1 and A4, for example. Okay? Now suppose you have a mutation introduce some alleles, say, into the population at a low rate. If your allele is A2, if your mutant is A2, according to our theorem, it will be eliminated. So nothing happens. However, if there's some extreme alleles introduced, say A6, which corresponds to A6, right? Little A6. Then A4 will be eliminated. And this can go on and on and on, right? So what this, so here you have A1 here. You have A1 here. What this means is that the difference between A1 and A6 becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. So if this difference reflects some increasing phenotype differentiation, maybe the reproduction isolation can be evolved. Because all the intermediates are eliminated, and you become more and more specialized. You can imagine there's a big simplex. This is a simplex, right? A big simplex there. And if you add a new face, that new face will not affect the dynamic if the new allele is intermediate, but will affect the dynamic widely if the new allele is extreme. entities, okay? So this example motivates my study actually quite a bit, okay? So I hope this may be interesting to you. Any questions?
Sure. Just one comment. I mean, it's a very interesting mechanism. But I would call it parametric speciation since there's space involved. That's my fault.
Okay.
Because at one point, that mainly people talk syntactic.
Yeah,
it's my fault.
So I've seen this kind of divergence before in models where you've got some competition between alleles. There's some kind of a trait axis, and you've got competition between things which depends on how close they are.
Mm-hmm.
So if the things which are at the extremes compete less than the things in the middle, then you can get pushing towards the extremes. But if I understand right, you haven't got anything like that in your model. You've got the ones in the middle are dying out not because of competition between alleles, but for some other reason which I haven't fully understood.
Selection. I mean, you could still view this form as
selection is in competition.
Selection. You could view the selection as being
competition.
So what model of competition gives you your choices of selection?
None of those usually treated in the literature.
Isn't it just that you know, they lose in the selection in both habitats to either one or the other extreme? So competition basically comes from selection. Outcompeted in both habitats, but by different alleles.
You can write down that selection contribution in terms of competition, just the selection, but of course, the migration is really important.
And also, you can see that the example which I produced earlier. Excluded by things like this, because in those cases two alleles are very similar. Here they are not. Yeah. So anyway.
But you're not getting the same as in this interspecific competition models. But it's a very similar mechanism because both generate some kind of disselection.
Okay.
Is this under arbitrary selection so that anywhere in your right-hand beam, you can migrate into the left-hand beam, or does this have some localization? Like you.
This is a continuous model, so I'm thinking just it's a random diffusion, so moving to the neighborhood. So.
So when you say arbitrary migration, it's still local though.
Yeah, arbitrary migration still means basically means that the elliptical operator is arbitrary general second degree operator. Okay. So it's a mathematical term more. Yeah. Means not just homogeneous isotropic, but arbitrary, but general migration pattern.
The drift and the covariance are arbitrary, over the M and the V. And they can depend on space, they're not constant.
Yeah, I mean, I just, if you think that these things, everything can hop between these two sides, more easily.
Things don't hop, right? This sample paths are continuous.
Right, but if they could, then you might think that sort of the generalists might then be maintained.
Well, no, because, well.
I mean, it's a different model.
No, but what I presented in continuous time, those hopped, right? And Ewan and I had a very similar result. We don't have it in discrete time, but if you remember, it was very similar discrete space continuous time. Although I didn't give this application partly because I expected you and Ewan. It's more natural in a continuous space case.
Okay. John, can I just continue? It's okay. Okay, for weak and strong migrations, the answer becomes very simple. So for if there's I such that S I of x is less than the maximum of S g of x for every x, and if selection is very strong, you always expect the PI go to zero. So this assumption simply means that allele AI in sense is nowhere the fittest. Then, if the sufficiently strong selection, you are gone. And for strong migration, you have something similar. Okay. So for weak or strong migrations, the result can be much more precise than the intermediate selection coefficient strengths. Okay. Intermediate is a harder one. Okay. So I think I have maybe two more sections. Can I just? Okay. So the next one I'm going to talk about the protection of allele. Okay. Protection of allele is harder somehow to show for some reason. Okay, so let me first say what it means, the protection of allele in mathematical terms. Simply means the following. There exists a positive number delta I such that for any initial data there exists time ti such that pi at xt is always bigger to pi for every x and after time ti. So what this means is that in a big simplex, and if you draw, say, this distance, roughly say it's delta I here, delta I here, okay? No matter where you start, initial data, your initial data here, it's going to move in finite time, okay? This delta I is independent of your initial data. Okay. So this is called protection of allele.
So this is everywhere in space.
Yes.
It is at
yes.
Frequency delta I greater.
Yes. Yeah. Of course, delta I can be very small. Okay. Mathematically, it exists means something can be rather small. Okay. Let's still consider just say homogeneous isotropic migration. Okay. Again, eigenvalue problem comes in. For any continuous function which is not identical to zero, if you consider this eigenvalue problem, and if the weight function is positive somewhere and the integral is negative, then you can find a positive eigenvalue such that the eigenfunction is positive. This is what we discussed before. So the key point is that give me any weight, A of x, we can always find such a principal eigenvalue there. And turns out this eigenvalue is important for protection of the allele. Okay. So for protection of allele, what we talk about, maybe it's 2004, I remember wrong, maybe 2004 this should be. Yeah. We have some general results, but it's not easy to explain, but anyway, let me go through it a little bit, okay? So if you define a function which we call gi of x, which is if you subtract r I h of x and rj of x, and if you take the minimum for any j and h which are not equal to I, and for every x and do that. If gi is positive somewhere, this simply means AI is the fittest allele at some place. Then AI is always protected for every random positive when this integral is big or equal to zero. Or for lambda bigger than lambda naught of GI, the eigenvalue, if the integral is negative. Okay. So this protection is one protection of one particular allele, okay? Now, if GI is positive somewhere for every I, then for lambda bigger than the maximum of all these eigenvalues, you can always prove there's one internal equilibrium. I did not say it's polymorphism because I don't know it's a stability, okay? The proof uses so-called permanence theory. It essentially says the following. If each allele is protected, then there exists at least one internal equilibrium. So recently, in people developed such a theory to do things like this. And the reason is because bifurcation techniques do not seem to work well here at all. If someone is interested why it doesn't work out.
The continuous phase setting or?
It's because of the following. Suppose you have five alleles, and for lambda larger than that number, all five alleles are protected. So there's one internal equilibrium, right? Where does that internal equilibrium come from? Usually what comes from is the following. For five alleles, you have five vertex, right? A vertex usually loses stability. And then one edge equilibrium will become stable. Edge equilibrium simply means you have two alleles. Okay? Now if you increase lambda, that edge equilibrium will lose stability. Maybe the bifurcation is will then another internal equilibrium but with only three alleles would appear. Good. Now, how do these things go to eventually with five alleles all present? It's not clear at all from bifurcation point of view. Okay. Say, usual simplex, right? Usual simplex. This is four alleles. This means four alleles because you have four vertex, right? In the beginning, this is when lambda is small. Let's say this 1, 0, 0, 0 means A1 is fixed when small lambda. And when you increase lambda, what happens is that this one will become unstable. One edge equilibrium will appear. Let's say it's 0, 1, 0, 0. So this simply means it's A1, A2, 0, 0 there, right? With only A1, allele A1 and A2 there. Now, this one, as you increase lambda, what likely to happen sometimes is that this one will lose stability again. We'll move to into this phase, say 0, 0, 1, 0, this phase. Okay? And if you increase lambda again, this equilibrium will become unstable and then the four alleles will be present. That's probably the most common case, if I guessed. But how do you use bifurcation to do it? There's essentially no way to do it, unfortunately.
But in principle, it's also possible to.
Because you don't know how to analyze the stabilities of all these guys. Even the stability of this is very hard. Because the lambda is intermediate. So then you don't know any behavior about those polymorphisms. Whether you know they're stable, they're unstable. It's difficult to know.
And I mean, permanence theory also doesn't tell you if the equilibrium is stable or maybe unstable.
Exactly. That's the bad thing about permanence theory. It only tells you the existence of internal equilibrium. There may be the periodic solution, exactly. So there's some mathematical theory needs to be developed here, okay? So in the case of nerve dominance, the answer becomes very simple because what simply means, what is G of X? The G of Fx is simply Si of X subtract the max of all Si G of X. Okay? So this should be much easier to understand. And then the results is much easier to understand here. We have one conjecture here. We suspect that if Gi is positive somewhere for every I, then for sufficiently large lambda, we know that all alleles will be protected, right? But more than that should be true. There exists exactly one internal equilibrium, and it is globally asymptotically stable. What this simply means is that each allele is the best in certain region. Then for sufficiently strong selection, of course, there will be favored in that particular region, which means the protection of all alleles. But the question is whether there's only such one unique possibility.
So that would be the extension of the discrete time, discrete team results, basically.
Yes, you can say that, because Sam Carling and McGregor proved such a result, I believe, right, for certain cases.
Yeah.
For small migration.
That would start with no migration and then...
Right. And here, unfortunately, the perturbation is singular perturbation. Because it's small, this is a weak migration. So you're really difficult to find out whether they are all step functions in step distributions, essentially. Actually, step distribution is not enough to prove stability, unfortunately. Okay, so I thought about this actually last night after listening to Tom and Reinhardt's talk. So I want to maybe just think about some questions. Some are very general. For instance, how does the dynamics of migration selection models change as the selection coefficient varies from small to large? Well, for small, we know quite a bit. For large, we also know quite a bit. But we really know very little about intermediate range, and which is even difficult for three alleles with no dominance. Okay. For two alleles, we know no dominance case very well, but we know for dominant or recessive alleles, one of them. Actually, I'm very generous. I say not much is known. Little is known. Okay, in this case. What about asymmetric migrations? Tom did some work in the 70s, maybe. What about a geographic barrier to the traveling wave solutions? So these are for two alleles. For multiple alleles, of course, there's more questions there. For instance, as I point out, for instance, loss of protection of alleles, uniqueness of stability of polymorphisms, okay? What about multiple loci? So Tom always discouraging me working on this. but I think maybe we should somehow start with, say, simple cases like two loci, no apoptosis, no dominance. The reason is because we understand no dominant case somehow better than before. So at least maybe this is something we should, I would like to try here, okay? There's one more page, it's important. So I want to thank Tom for working with me for so many years as my mentor, and also the financial support by NSF and also our institute. Thank you.